Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com. Welcome, everyone. My guest today is Hillary Saunders, co-founder and chief broker officer at Side, to talk about NAR settling the commission lawsuits. Hillary is one of our women of influence. She's the host of the Own It podcast, and she will be a speaker at the gathering in April on how real estate business models are changing. Hillary, welcome to the podcast.
Oh my gosh. Thank you, Sarah. This is great.
It is so great to have you on. Of course, you have your own podcast. So you are a pro at this. Really excited to be hosting this discussion today. We had set this up because we always want to hear what you're saying, but also you're a speaker at the gathering coming up in April, and you are going to be speaking on, let me get the title right in front of me, How Real Estate Business Models Are Changing. Wow. Great topic. And, you know, might have a few updates to that after last week.
I know. It's great. Yeah, we have Own It is our podcast, and it's awesome. We get to talk to industry leaders across the real estate space about how they are actually owning their business and owning their future. And this kind of ties in to a lot of how business models are changing in the real estate space. And I think a big key to that is really the ownership piece, as well as having unique value proposition to the end consumer, which the timing of this and the NAR settlement is just spot on and exciting, in my opinion.
Well, very timely discussion. So not the least, which you're also an attorney.
Yes, ma'am.
Trained that way. So perfect person to talk to right now. So let's give our audience, so our audience might be in real estate, but they also might be in mortgage. So let's give them a little bit of background. So on Friday, NAR settled, the National Association of Realtors settled a lawsuit, but they left out some companies. So they have a $418 million settlement that they went to that actually it covers the home owners, but not the home sellers or the home buyers. Let me get this in front of me.
It's a lot. And quite frankly, I don't know that I've spent enough time digesting the ins and outs of that settlement and who it can bind and who they can't bind. So, and mind you, this is all subject to federal court approval. So all this fun speculation that we're doing still has to get the rubber stamp, whether it's partial changes or tweaks from the federal court system. So this is not all final yet.
That's a great point, because they have, you know, we've seen the DOJ jump in and say, nah, we don't accept this settlement on other lawsuits. So it's kind of a tricky time. So I'll just give a quick four bullet points here. So NAR will pay $418 million into a court-controlled trust over a four-year period. They'll abolish the participation rule that required sell-side agents to make an offer of compensation to buyer brokers. Broker compensation will no longer appear in the MLS field data, and MLS participants working with buyers must enter into a written buyer broker agreement. And then according to NAR, this settlement ends all the litigation claims brought by home sellers, but the lawsuits filed by home buyers, which are known as Batten 1 and Batten 2, will continue. Again, with the caveat that this has not been accepted, this is what we know so far. So given all of that, Hillary, here you are at Side. What does this mean for Side?
Business as usual. The sky is not falling. It is not the emoji of the dog with the house burning down behind him. I think there's a couple things that need to be clarified right off the bat, and the media, quite frankly, is doing a disservice to the public, which is there is an implication or headline that the set commission rate is ending. Well, there was never a set commission rate. Commissions were and are always freely negotiable. So that whole concept needs to be debunked. I think the realtors out there, the lenders out there, we all have to do a much better job educating the consumer and explaining that commissions vary. It depends on what level of service you get. It the same as if you go to, you know, a high-end hotel and are expecting some kind of spa service that is five stars, you're going to pay a lot more for it. You're going to get a lot more service versus you go to, you know, your local masseuse who's your friend who you're just paying for, just get those knots out of my back. It's a big difference in the level of service. So that needs to get addressed right off the bat. Aside, it is no different. We already are very transparent. Our partners are top of their game, and they explain to their buyer and seller clients what they charge for their services. And a lot of them already utilize a tiered system or a tiered service level. So it depends on what kind of level of service that that seller would like to hire that partner for. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that. A lot more excellent realtors across the board are going to go into that kind of a situation if their brokerage allows it. But on the buy side, this is where I think our mortgage friends are really going to have to help us and help educate the buyers. What options are there? Do our buyers who are using FHA and VA, do we have a very clear option for them? How are we going to best serve them, making sure that they get top-notch representation by a top-notch buyer's agent? Because that person should be compensated for the expertise they bring to the transaction. And what's that going to look like? You know, Washington State has had this separation for over a year now. I think it's going on two or so. And I think it's different because they were non-realtor-based MLS, the Northwest Multiple Listing Service. So they've been having this conversation. It's been working excellently. So maybe we should all take a note from Washington State and look. They've had clear buyer broker agreements in place. The compensation is very clearly outlined in the listing agreement, but in the purchase agreement as well. So it's everybody knows what they're paying and what they're getting. So I think that is the big, big takeaway in all of this is transparency. And that is how the real estate industry is changing, not just brokerage models being more transparent, but also the end consumer is really understanding what their buyer broker is bringing to the table and what their listing broker is bringing to the table.
I will tell you, so I was in Kansas City, Missouri for part of that trial. And the part that, so I wasn't there for the whole thing. Maybe they did a great job before I got there. But one of the things that clearly the jury did not understand was the value of the buyer agent. They didn't. And it was just crazy to me to hear the lead attorney Ketchmark, who I've, you know, I moderated that debate with him and Anthony LaMacchia, say that, like, well, it's on Zillow. How hard can it be? It's on Zillow. They can go find their thing on Zillow. And I was just like, the lack of understanding in that jury to think that, well, it's on Zillow, I can just go do it. As someone who has bought and sold houses, I don't know. You must not have ever bought and sold a house. I mean, that's like the most basic thing. It's like, here's an address and here's a price and here's a listing. That's all it tells you. There's nothing, you know, coming in there. So from your perspective, you know, what do buyer agents need to talk about? You know, how do they need to explain this in a way that as they're, you know, because now it's like, now that has to be a conversation up front. Here's what I'm bringing to the table, and here's what I charge for that.
100%. And I actually have that as a talking point at the gathering. Is one of the reasons why the industry is changing is because we do have the benefit of home searches, whether you use homes.com, Zillow, Redfin, doesn't matter what you use, but it pulls automatic data. So yes, you can see what is for sale in your area. There is a understanding from the really good buyer's agents out there that they can tell you that what they bring to the table doesn't even start until you talk about negotiations into that contract. Because contract negotiation is key to good buyer representation. And then once you're in contract, getting that transaction over the closing table, so many things can go wrong between inspections and financing and life circumstances that it really does take a veteran to understand how to get their client through it in the least pain way possible. And for buyer's agents who, and I've heard this also, Sarah, is I actually was having a conversation with an agent a couple weeks ago talking about value proposition. And I said, talk to me like I'm going to be your buyer and explain to me what you do for me. And they did. They got stuck on, well, I'm going to set up a really good search for you. And I said, well, I can do that on my own. You know, it's not that hard. And they looked at me and they're like, well, I'm not sure. I said, okay, well, as put yourself in your client's shoes. And if you're saying that to me, why on earth would I want to pay you? Because I can go do that myself. So the important part is really sitting down and outlining and taking the time to understand yourself, what you bring to your clients, whatever that may be, because there's, you know, 32 different flavors of buyer representation. There's probably more of the different nuances that each individual broker has in their back pocket. Like, are they an attorney? Great. Elevate your contract negotiation skills. Maybe you are an ex-lender. Great. You have a lot of insight into the loans and the negotiation of the loans and what you can, how you can utilize those products to best your client's interest. Maybe you're a contractor. That helps too. So there's a lot of pieces that are going to get put into this puzzle. What's going to happen though, Sarah, I will gladly bet money on this, is that agents who are not well versed in their own value proposition or don't conduct enough business will leave the industry. They can go to referral status, they can hang their licenses at specific brokerages and just hand off business. And they should. They really should, because it's those agents that are not experienced enough to articulate their value prop that should not be in this industry.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know, I'm in Colorado. I was visiting my sister, and she moved here from Texas, which is where I currently live. And we were talking about her her agent, who is, she hears from all the time. This agent is part of her life and has been since she moved here a couple years ago. And has now, my sister has now referred her like 3 or 4 other people that she sold houses to. So she came, and even before they got to the contract negotiation stage, her understanding of what the Colorado market was, and just very specific, if you're coming from Texas, you are not thinking about, there might be a former mine underneath your house. Like, there was mining.
Please tell me it has gold.
She was telling me this. I was like, what? I mean, nobody's digging underneath my house in Texas. Just all these very specific things. And then very specific to that neighborhood. And then, you know, I just bought a house, and I bought from a builder, and I still had a real estate agent because I wanted someone to walk through that house with me, look at the inspection report, and really see the signs, because new building, I think my builder did a great job. But you know, if you're on TikTok, if you're all these other things, I follow those inspectors that even on new builds can be a nightmare, right? So it's those kind of things that if you're doing those, you should be able to articulate that pretty quick. Like, I'm surprised that someone wasn't able to say, here's what I bring to the table, because really that's what you're doing every day. You're selling yourself.
Right. But that is the issue. And that's why we're in this situation. And this is why NAR had to go through that, is that there are 49% of licensees actually only sell one house or don't sell at all in a year. So that is 1 out of 2, basically, agents that you'd look at a list of agents, and they're the ones who are not doing it correctly or skipping steps because they just don't have the experience to do so. But the building point, to your point, is spot on. I represented buyers last year, a couple of them with new builds. And it's that with especially new builders, is you know their history. If you're good and you know, oh yeah, 5 years ago, they had a problem with this particular thing that's been addressed, but I have the contact. So if that does happen, let me know and I know how to fix it. So those are the pieces that you bring that are quite frankly, invaluable.
They really are. Well, let's talk about the luxury side a little bit, because I do think that's a whole other animal. And I feel like, you know, those brokers, those agents have already sort of, this is part of what they do, right? But at the same time, I've heard, you know, at the trial, and then even talking with my relatives, people are like, okay, but why should it be a percentage? Like, it's not harder to sell a home that's like $2 million than it is to sell a home for $300,000. I would love to know what you think about that. And tell me about the luxury side and what that looks like.
I understand those arguments completely. There are very big differences, I think, in what the luxury market is expecting when you list and sell a house versus the lower price point. You see much more multiple offers happen in the lower price points because the buyer pool is larger, right? The luxury price point, however, has a very particular marketing that is required and cross-marketing to different markets across the country that you have to be tied into to get those particular buyers in front of your property. So it's a lot more of who you know, the networking that goes on behind the scenes, the Rolodexes that are being called, the work that is done, not necessarily on like holding open houses, but it's phone calls and emails and showing up to different events where those buyer pools are at. But regards to negotiating the commissions, it's similar to commercial, right? Commercial has been done this way for a long time, which is it is negotiated at the time of entering into that lease agreement or sale of a commercial property, what the buyer's agent is a representative is going to get paid. So it feels new, but it's been done this way for a long time in our industry. It's just that the residential market is now feeling like it's a new shift when we actually have been experienced with it for a long time. Just nobody has really looked outside of their little tiny narrow purview. I think that it's a different, I don't know. I feel like the luxury market has its own issues. I think the buyers and sellers are a little more tuned into what has been going on in negotiations for a long time. They might be a little bit more savvy, meaning that they have more experience in negotiations of those type versus the mass market, the mass media correspondence to the average home seller that is under $500,000.
But I also feel like if you are buying a luxury home, and I know there's not a strict definition of luxury, it depends on where you are and what that looks like. But if you are buying a higher end home, you probably also value your time more. And you also value the expertise of people that you can hire to help you make this decision. I would think that that's an easier sell in the sense of like, you're used to surrounding yourself with people who like, let me hire the best for this to get me the best result.
I think you also understand the value of what you're paying for, meaning that you understand the complexities and the experience needed to negotiate those pieces on your behalf. I will say that it is more common in luxury markets across the country for, say, the seller to say, here, listing agent, let me know when it's done. I have other things to do, right? Value of time considerations versus somebody who maybe actually needs to see the numbers broken down per percentage. Like if I say I charge 6%, for example, on listings, and this is what I'm bringing to the table, if you want to negotiate up or down a percent, I will actually get you, say, 4% return. So it's up to you, Mrs. Seller. If you want to leave that money on the table, you can take my lower end package or the higher end package, and you'll see a much bigger dollar return in the end.
That's a really interesting perspective. I think that's really interesting. Well, let's talk about, so, you know, when we think about how the model is changing. So the first thing you've already brought up is like, you think there's just going to be a wholesale, you know, a bunch of people leaving the industry that probably need to. They're more like what we talk about, the hobbyists. Maybe they just do it so that when they want to buy a house, they get a break or whatever. But like, if you're talking about 50% that, or almost 50% that only sell one or two, that's a huge exodus, but maybe a good one.
I think it's going to be a good thing. Why not? I mean, if I don't know another industry, I would like to know of one where you can have a license, put it in referral status, and just hold it. You don't have to pay for anything other than keeping it, you know, in referral status. But then you can receive money by just making referrals to other agents. Like, why not get the best of both worlds and not have to actually, you know, go do what you want to do all day or what you already do all day? I think that's going to be a massive shift. But also, to your point earlier, the transparency in listings and things like that, the old traditional model hasn't kept up with the new trends. So people are wanting to have a Instagram boutique feel to their experience, whether it's their listing or their buyer's experience. You saw this a handful of years ago when HGTV had their House Hunters show on. They probably still do, but it had its heyday a handful of years ago. And you saw then that buyers wanted a curated experience, right? And so there was a shift away from the old way of people just going to open houses. Now it was agents actually curating it. Let me show you the cute downtown of this neighborhood and let's really get a feel for it. This is what you're buying. So the boutique feel of a brokerage is where the top agents actually want to go. They don't want the old school model. They want what is the more, I don't want to say juicy because that's not the right word, but the more curated feel that they can then give to their client. So they don't want to be beholden to a particular four walls. They want to give their own experience and share that unique perspective for their clients.
So let's talk a little bit about you mentioned, you know, what the mortgage partners might need to do. And that's something that, you know, our audience has both real estate and mortgage professionals in it. And we did a follow-up story on like, what does this mean for real estate? And then like, what does this mean for the mortgage industry? And there were a lot of really interesting things in there because, I mean, we know that the best outcome is when they work together. But how does this change that? Like, who gets to the buyer first now? If the buyer agent equilibrium is sort of thrown off, does that mean that you look for a lender first and then they help you find, like, what does that look like in your opinion?
I think it's more of partnerships. We had a really, really interesting discussion at our side by side in January down in San Diego with one of our, with a local lender and some of our partners. And the overwhelming feeling that came out of it was, the lender and the broker work together. We always have in some regard, but I think now with what's going on with the compensation, it's going to have to really solidify those partnerships because nobody has really talked about, and there may not be an answer to, is how are the majority of the programs, FHA, VA, the ones that majority of buyers use, how are they going to respond? Are they going to now allow for compensation to be included? Question mark. Yes, no, I don't know. And whose programs are going to offer those to the buyer or to the seller as a credit so the seller can offer it? I don't know what that's going to look like. I do think that needs to catch up with what is happening right now. And our industries need to work better at one, educating the public, and two, coming up with very clear benefits to those clients and making it simple.
I think that's so key. So one of the things that struck me right away when I was there for the verdict in the Sitzer Burnett and since then is just like, if you're a first-time home buyer, if you're a VA borrower, if you're an FHA borrower, this can't even, I mean, some of this they're barred from even doing, right? Like, so, it feels like maybe the unintended consequence is just making it harder on the first-time homebuyer or a disadvantaged homebuyer already.
Well, this is where I get a little bit annoyed with how the DOJ is coming on top of things and saying, oh, it's all about commission. Well, if it's actually, if we're all in agreement that it, we're all pro-consumer and we want the consumer to have the best experience, to be protected the most, and to be on an equal playing field, so that way we're not creating more discrepancy between the haves and have-nots, because that's what's going to happen, is that majority of people do not have extra money laying around to pay as a buyer. They're putting all their money into their down payment or maybe their closing costs and all these things. They don't have a stack of cash to pay for great representation. So what does that look like? Well, the buyer then gets the short end of the stick because either they're not going to have an agent, they're going to have an agent who's double ending, which that's a little bit of a hairy discussion point, or they're going to have an agent, quote unquote, who's doing it as a discount. And now you're not sure, are they fully in my corner? Or are they just doing it for the couple bucks that I can pay them? I think, yes, it's an unintended consequence, but it's massive. It could be potentially awful. So I hope we can clean it up.
I mean, me too. And unintended, but also easily seeing that that was going to happen, that it would be. Maybe it's not that was the intent, but it's not a hard line to draw to say this is what's going to happen, right? So maybe unintended, but definitely not an obvious. It's an obvious thing. And it just strikes me that this administration and lots of people within this housing administration have tried to help those. You know, we've seen so many efforts for people who are on the fringes, whether that's, you know, we're going to waive title insurance on this kind of thing. We're going to do a different kind of appraisal that might save you this much money. It's like, so you're looking at those things. Why not look at this as well? Like, why wasn't this part of that calculus? I know these move in different channels, right? So, you know, this was a civil lawsuit. This was, you know, but if DOJ is going to come in and do anything, or if they're going to say, yes, they approve or not approve, like, I think that that should be a huge part of what people are looking at. Or, you know, the agencies now or the government for those loans have to change what they will accept or how this is structured.
100%. And I think it comes from the top is saying that address, just shedding light on the issue and saying this was an unintended consequence. We need to address it. If we do not, this is what will happen. And then empower the agencies to come up and change their rules or make adjustments.
You know, as a lawyer, as someone who looks at that, because you even said like that sort of sketchy business where you're representing the buyer and the seller on both ends. What do you think about that? If you're a home buyer out there and you look at that, what do you, Hillary, as a lawyer, think about that arrangement?
I think it can be very dicey. There are states that don't allow it. There are states that have very clear delineations that every party involved has to be fully aware of the potential pitfalls, and they have to agree to it knowing what they're doing. I personally, speaking just from myself, I would never do it because that is something that I just cannot full-heartedly go behind both clients and argue fiercely for them. That being said, it's a personal choice, but the consumer really has to understand what they're getting or not getting.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that and that openness. The last question I have is like, this settlement did not include everybody. And one of the, you know, categories left out is brokerages that do more than $2 billion a year. I believe that's the thing. And that side, right? So what does that mean for side?
I think that, you know, from the get-go, we have only been transparent with consumers. Our partners are at the top of their game and explain very thoroughly what a commission or payment looks like and what they're getting. So for us, the reality is I mentally operate in a world where anyone can sue anybody for anything. That is unfortunately or fortunately the world we live in, right? And so I don't know that the blanket settlement of protection of certain companies will actually hold water. It might on paper, it might at the end of the day, but it would be very difficult to prohibit someone who is truly harmed from suing to get recovery.
I appreciate that. And I'm sure as a lawyer, that's like just built into your DNA too, right? Like even more than most people. Hillary, I so appreciate you being on, being transparent. We're really looking forward to the session that you're doing at the gathering. And it's so timely. And I'm sure between here and there, which is like, you know, a month, there'll be even more things to discuss. Really excited for that. Thank you for being my guest today.
Oh, thanks, Sarah. I appreciate it. Always glad to spend time with you and your audience.
Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to take a minute to rate the show and leave a comment. And make sure to tune in tomorrow for more news and insight.